Hello, I am George Meek, Director of Research for MetaScience Foundation. I hope that by now you have become familiar with the mind-expanding concepts presented in the Many Mansions chart, as well as those in the text and illustrations in the booklet, The Magic of Living Forever, and the pamphlet, A Photohistory of Man's Communication Systems. With that background, you can better comprehend the significance of the material you will be hearing in this recording. On it, I share with you information regarding one of the most exciting events that has occurred in the long history of man. Since the beginning of time, people in all parts of the globe have speculated as to whether or not death was the end. Thousands of years of such speculation, plus the admonition of religious leaders to believe in a life beyond the grave, still left nagging doubts in the minds of all but the most devout. We were told that life after death existed, but no one could ever pick up a telephone or a two-way radio and carry on an extended and meaningful conversation with even one. Of the perhaps 8 billion persons who have lived on Earth and then died. Well, the message of this tape is that the long silence has been broken. Lengthy, two-way, normal voice conversations with persons who have died are now a reality. They have taken place. They have been recorded. In order to report to you on this momentous development, I will divide the information into several blocks. First, I will talk about the history of attempts to use electronic instruments for communication with the worlds of spirit. Then I'll tell you about the first major breakthrough, followed by the second breakthrough. Then I'll talk about the status of the present research and its significance for all mankind. Lastly, we will consider plans for further research. So let's start with historical background of instrumental communication with those who have died. If you wish to comprehend the breakthrough to be reported later, it is really important for you to absorb the background information that I will give in the next several minutes. The story begins about 60 years ago. The idea of building a wireless or a telephone or a radio that would make it possible to talk to the dead is an idea that has been around that long. Three of the greatest geniuses and inventors of our age, men who helped harness electricity for the good of mankind and laid much of the foundation upon which our marvels of electronic communication have been based, spent the final years of their lives trying to develop devices for communicating with the world of spirit. These men were Edison, Marconi, and Tesla. They succeeded in much else, but all died without inventing such an instrument. The reason they failed is obvious, at least from today's vantage point. When Thomas Edison died in 1931, scientific knowledge about the nature of energy had advanced very little. The field of solid-state physics, for instance, had not yet been born. Following in the footsteps of those famous explorers are some pioneers whose names will not be as familiar to you. In 1956, two men in California, a photographer named Attila von Zale and a writer named Raymond Bayless, began the era of what has become known as EVP, electronic voice phenomenon. They recorded on magnetic tape some paranormal voices, voices that should not logically have been there. Bayless reported their experiments in the Journal of the American Society of Psychical Research in the winter of 1959. The announcement made hardly a ripple. Not a single person contacted either the society or the researchers to inquire about their work. But across the Atlantic, things were about to heat up in the field of EVP research. In the summer of 1959, a Swedish film producer by the name of Fredrik Jurgensen came up with some extra voices on his recordings as he was trying to capture bird songs on the tape in the countryside. Amidst the bird songs, he heard a faint human voice, a male voice speaking Norwegian, saying something about bird voices of the night. Like anybody in that situation would, Jurgensen wondered if the voices weren't just stray radio signals. But the more he listened carefully to his tapes, the more voices he detected that could not be explained as radio transmissions. The voices included some personal messages, such as, "Friedrich, you are being watched." And a few weeks later, he recorded what he recognized to be the voice of his mother, who had died 4 years earlier, saying in German, "Friedel, my little Friedel, can you hear me?" Jurgensen continued his experiments and published a book about them in 1964. In addition to using the tape recorder with a microphone, he experimented with making recordings from the radio, then studying them to see if he could detect extra voices. His book was read by Dr. Konstantin Rodeva, a psychologist and author of books on philosophy who lived in Germany. After visiting Jurgensen and listening to his tapes, Rodeva decided to experiment himself in order to answer the question of whether the voices were somehow connected with Jurgensen's particular personality. For 3 months, Rodeva could detect nothing paranormal on his tapes. Then he heard a whispered, "That is correct," in the Latvian language. This was in response to his remark that spirit world inhabitants, like those on Earth, might face certain limitations. Rodeva was encouraged, and he went on to collect a huge number of voice recordings. By the time he published the first book on his work in 1968, he had recorded some 70,000 phrases. Also, he had added some new techniques. He learned that if he tuned his radio to the so-called white noise between the stations, the tapes recorded at those wavelengths would contain voices. Word of Dr. Rodeva's work spread, and scientists and engineers in Europe tried to duplicate his experiments. One of those was Alex Schneider, a Swiss physicist who helped Rodeva develop a new method of recording. The two discovered that voices not heard by the human ear at the time of the recording could be detected on the tape when it was played back. Other pioneers who cooperated with Rodeva included Theodore Rudolph, a high-frequency engineer who worked for the Telefunken firm. Rudolph developed his own recording device called a goniometer. Another colleague of Dr. Rodeva was Dr. Franz Seidel, an electronics engineer in Vienna who developed a device he called a psychophone. Engineers and scientists were not the only people to become interested in experimenting with electronic voice phenomenon. Many lay people did also after reading Rodeva's book. So many began experimenting, in fact, that a German woman, Hanna Buschbeck, started a newsletter in 1969 to help the experimenters keep in touch and exchange ideas. Today, there are more than 1,000 people in Germany alone recording, analyzing, and cataloging paranormal voices. One parish priest in Switzerland, Father Leo Schmidt, has recorded thousands of phrases, and that is only in Europe. Not until 1971 was Rodeva's book brought out in English under the title Breakthrough, an amazing experiment in electronic communication of the dead. It was published by the British firm of Colin Smythe, which is a fascinating story in itself. Mr. Smythe was handed a copy of Rodeva's book at a book fair in Germany with a suggestion that he might want to consider publishing it. He turned it over to an associate, Peter Bander, who was skeptical about the whole matter. Until, that is, Smythe himself tried some experimenting with the voices and came up with the voice of Bander's mother, who was dead. The two publishers decided to have Rodeva brought to England so that his tapes and his methods could be checked out by scientists and engineers under controlled conditions. Convinced that Rodeva had, in fact, come up with unexplained voices on tape, they published the book, along with a record of some of the voices recorded. As a result, many more scientists and laymen throughout the world are now experimenting with EVP. So far, I have said little about the content of the messages these researchers are receiving. Frankly, there have been serious problems with these recordings. First, they are very difficult to hear and understand. As an example, let me play you a minute or so of Dr. Rodeva's tapes of the electronic voices.
A request by the experimenter that the voice entities should tell him from where they came is answered by a voice saying, "Delicious lunch." German, land of the soul. A voice later identified as that of a man who lived and died in a place called Kirnbach in the Black Forest, Germany, says, Wartet auf Walter von Kirnbach. Wartet auf Walter von Kirnbach.
See what I mean? For one thing, you've probably noticed that the voices are about twice the speed of normal human speech, and that they have a rhythm different from ours. Then, there is the problem that Dr. Rodiva knew many languages, Swedish, German, Russian, Latvian, Spanish, French, and English. Some critics of his work have reasoned, therefore, that what may actually be just stray sounds, he declared to be a meaningful phrase spoken in a language many other researchers would not understand. However, in 1981, our spirit communicators gave us what we consider the correct explanation of multiple voices. They said that whenever an EVP researcher establishes an open channel to the spirit world, where there are many persons who want to communicate, it is as though several grab the microphone and all try to speak at the same time. What comes through is a mixture of words and phrases, often in different languages. Then there are the psychologists and experts in psychic phenomenon who have proposed some alternative explanations for the voices. The words and phrases could be just messages from the subconscious of the listener, they say, or from the subconscious of someone else, projected somehow onto the tape. One director of a nursing home in Germany, for instance, reported recording the voices of patients who were supposedly not conscious at the time. Most importantly, even if we assume that the voices on the tapes are those of people no longer living on Earth, we have to admit that what they have to say is rather trivial. A person may find reassuring evidence of life after death if he hears the voice of his mother, whom he knows to be dead. For the rest of us, the snatches of speech so far recorded on tape seem to have little value except to provide one more bit of evidence that life appears to continue on a different dimension after we die. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that Jurgensen, Rodiva, and the other electronic voice experimenters were wasting their time. Far from it. The significant thing about their work is that they did take that first most difficult step in communication with another level of existence. It was comparable to my own first step 57 years ago when I experimented with the only kind of radio equipment then available, a crystal of galena and a wire cat's whisker. At the time, it would have been almost impossible to convince me that clear, static-free radio communication would be feasible, and relatively soon, too. Within just my lifetime, we have progressed from that crude crystal set to TV broadcasts to our planet from space devices more than 1,000 million miles away. So it shouldn't be discouraging that Jurgensen and Rodiva's communications with the worlds of spirit were at first very crude. That is simply the nature of scientific research. Techniques are perfected only with the passage of time. The quality of the voices on the tapes began to improve, but very slowly. Let me play for you now an excerpt from some of the tapes made in 1977 by Raymond Cast, a hearing aid specialist in England. The German words following the comment by Mr. Cass are repeated a total of 3 times.
Hello, we're still here. We're packing up now to go back to Bridlington. And if there's someone here who is with us.
Der einzige Diebstahl, den man begrüßt. Der einzige Diebstahl, den man begrüßt. Der einzige Diebstahl, den man begrüßt.
You'll agree that is a little easier to make out. I personally became involved in EVP research in 1971 with a friend who is an electronic engineer and an inventor with more than 80 patents to his credit. He and I opened a small laboratory in Philadelphia. By 1975, we had become convinced that an apparatus far more sophisticated than what I found then being used in Europe would be necessary. We also decided that it was desirable to obtain help from the other side, that is, the active collaboration of someone who had died and who wanted to work with us in achieving two-way communication. That was easier said than done. About this time, we met William, an electronic technician who had well-developed clairvoyant and clairaudient capabilities. In other words, he had the ability to see and hear persons in other dimensions. With his help, we made contact with a man who, dead for 5 years, had been a medical doctor on our plane of life. Doc Nick, as we came to call him, had, fortunately, also been a ham radio operator. He suggested that instead of the so-called white noise traditionally used by EVP researchers, we should use certain audio frequencies. These would serve as an energy source against which the sounds produced by Doc Nick's vocal cords in his astral body could be played. Remember the electro-biochemical diagram on pages 13 and 14 of the Magic of Living Forever booklet that shows the astral body? He said the result would be that our ears and a tape recorder would pick up his voice. This suggestion sounded plausible to us because we had observed that all EVP voices had to steal energy from radio frequencies, spoken or sung words, music, or natural or artificially created white noise and so forth. After some experimentation, we had the great thrill on October 27, 1977, of hearing Doc Nick's first words just barely coming through the quite loud mixture of tones we had provided as a starting point. To you, hearing it for the first time, this short exchange may be almost as difficult to understand as the EVP voice samples given earlier. Here's the exchange. Can't blame William for being a bit scared when he had his first communication with someone who had been among the so-called dead for 5 years. But he showed his own good sense when he remarked to Doc Nick, "Who do you think will believe anything like this?" Our position in releasing these materials is precisely that of Doc Nick when he replied, "Don't worry about that. It's not important. Believe me." Those who scoff at this information, even after carefully evaluating this tape and the related printed materials, may later find themselves in the embarrassing position of one member of the French Academy of Sciences years ago. He told his learned colleagues, "I personally have examined Mr. Edison's phonograph, and I find that it is nothing but the clever use of ventriloquism." If some of you scoff at our breakthrough, it is probably because Doc Nick sounds a bit like a robot. We certainly agree that he does. But please recognize what you just heard for what it is. A start had been made towards someday getting continuous two-way conversation instead of jammed together bits of pieces, phrases that were characteristic of tens of thousands of the earlier EVP voice recordings. At about this time, it was our great good luck to come into contact with a scientist among the so-called dead who identified himself as Dr. George Jeffries Mueller. We remembered the 2,000-year-old injunction in the Bible to the mediums of that day to test spirit communicators. So we checked to see that Dr. Mueller really was who he claimed to be, and we hit the jackpot. He told us where we could find a copy of his death certificate issued in 1967. He told us his Social Security number. And he told us intimate details of his life and scholastic activities at the University of Wisconsin and Cornell University, his instructorship in physics at Cornell, and his top-level jobs in government and industry. His photograph and biographical data are given in our publication entitled Spiritcom. The fact that Dr. Mueller had written a textbook on electronics and had had a lifelong hobby of studying the theory of music enabled him to help us carry the research far beyond the level we had reached with Doc Nick and further refine our understanding of the audio frequencies we needed to arrive at our second major breakthrough. It occurred on September 22, 1980. Here it is.
I think that's much better right there with it.
Yes, sir, I understood, Doctor.
Very well.
Okay.
Very well, Marietta, ma'am. Quite a song. And everywhere that merry wind, the wind that William.
Yes, sir.
Play that man, William.
All right, Doctor. I'm sorry. I was lighting a cigarette.
Oh, that cigarette's again.
Yes, I did, Doctor.
Very well. I'm back about 3 feet. And of course, you can do it on the set. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And I change that frequency again with it.
Very well, Doctor.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And I think that is somewhat better when you play that band, if you will.
Well, Mary's Little Lamb certainly is adding to its claim to immortality. But since one of the first rules of science is that of replication, nothing could be more gratifying than to have Dr. Mueller's conversation confirm that we had at last established meaningful instrumental communication with a person who had shed his physical body. Now, thanks to Dr. Mueller's contributions to the new communication systems, we want to share a remarkable conversation with another communicator. What makes it remarkable is that he says he died 151 years ago. Fred Engstrom, which is how he identifies himself, says he lived in a rural area in Virginia and died in 1830. Our check of the scanty birth records of that place and time have not yet confirmed his existence then. But as you learned in The Magic of Living Forever, serial time, as we know it, does not exist in the worlds of spirit. When you listen to this next conversation, observe that this quality of Fred Engstrom's voice, while still robot-like, is vastly better than that of Doc Nick's voice at the time of our first breakthrough.
Would you give me a card of chance?
Because I'll make a tape of it, okay?
Okay, yeah, oh boy, that'll be fine. Oh boy, that's right, you're married. You were married. How long have you been married, Bill?
About 8 years.
I have to get at you. How old are you, Bill?
I'm 63.
Oh boy.
Mentally, I feel like I'm in my 20s, but when I shave, my mirror says, "Who are you fooling, old man?"
Yeah, I know what you mean. You're trying to find out the answer. Well, I'll tell you what, Bill, I'm going to have to go here real quick. Oh, boy, yeah, I'm going to have to go right now. So, I'll talk to you later, okay?
Yeah, it's okay, Fred. Good night.
The following examples of Dr. Mueller's voice are taken from many hours of two-way conversations with him, some of which lasted for half an hour or more. These tapes represent the present limited capability of the electromagnetic etheric device we call Spiricom, a word coined by taking portions of the two words spirit and communication. This particular device is called Spiricom Mark IV. The great value of the technical assistant given by Dr. Mueller is dramatically shown by this next excerpt, taken from a Spiricom conversation in April 1981. Near the start, he gives his reactions to one of the audio frequencies and then proceeds to pinpoint an electronic circuit problem on the video apparatus on which he and William were working.
Doctor. Yes, I know you're here, but I'm gonna cut down the volume of these other frequencies.
Very well, William.
I want to cut them down to a level that won't
I'm not sure, William, but I'm not sure.
You noticed how very specific Dr. Mueller was in pinpointing the problem on the experimental video device on which he and William were working. He said the problem lay near the third transistor in the preamp unit. The problem was an impedance mismatch and could be corrected by using a 150 ohm half watt resistor in parallel with a 0.0047 microfarad ceramic capacitor. What better proof could science want that Dr. Mueller's mind, memory banks, and personality are still alive and functioning in a useful and most dramatic way? And now we share an excerpt in which they further discuss our Viticom research project. Incidentally, the problems of developing a workable Viticom system seem even more monumental than those of perfecting Spiricom.
What's that again?
I got that five faceted from Edmonds.
Edmonds
is a company, Edmonds Scientific.
Oh, I understand. What were the results?
Well, I inserted it in the lens of the camera, but all I got was a lot of crazy color lights, but I didn't get any imagery.
Oh, I see. Well, very right. Well, I think it went wrong with this other procedure, William.
You perhaps noted that Dr. Mueller turned aside from the microphone to talk with another spirit person standing in the lab. William was unable to see him visually or clairvoyantly, or to hear him clairaudiently. The spirit, who told Dr. Mueller his name was Nathaniel, seemingly could not talk through Spiricom. With Dr. Mueller as intermediary, William and Nathaniel discussed boyhood activities, including pranks in which they had both participated more than half a century ago. The contacts with Dr. Mueller were sporadic. Days and even weeks would pass with no contact, even though William left the electronic equipment turned on. Then Dr. Mueller would pay an unexpected visit, like this one. Then, equally frustrating, there would be a totally unexplained termination of contact in the midst of a very useful conversation. Here is an example.
Well, I understand, but a lot of things I don't understand. Do you have any suggestions, Doctor? Do you have any suggestions? Dr. Mueller? Dr. Mueller? Oh, boy. Dr. Mueller, are you there, sir? Oh, my God. Dr. Mueller? Oh, boy.
In the early months of our conversations with Dr. Mueller, the electromagnetic factors, the phase of the moon, sunspots, or other unknown factors resulted in poor quality of Dr. Mueller's voice, as you will notice in this excerpt, in which Dr. Mueller responds to William's mention of possible surgery. These comments and his observations and his own death 14 years previously are worth careful listening, even though the poor quality may try your patience. There were many discussions on more joyful subjects than surgery and death experiences. Often, Dr. Mueller displayed his delightful humor. In this excerpt, he speaks of his fondness for carrots and cabbages.
Yeah, I just turned on the tape recorder, Doctor.
You were very well, William.
You said to hurry back, and I did. That has been exactly 1 week ago. Yeah, hold yourself. Cold weather has left us temporarily anyway. It's raining, it's nice and warm. Of course, never know what to expect. I'm going to try to put in a little garden this year.
Wonderful.
What's that again?
I said you're exactly a humble of carrots.
A cup of what?
Humble of carrots.
Oh, carrots.
Yes, with it.
Nice head of lettuce. I'm not going to plant acres, Doctor. What's that? I think you were talking at the same time I was.
Perhaps I said no. I have some cabbage. I like a fried cabbage. Or I love fried cabbage.
Fried cabbage. Well, I like sauerkraut.
No boy. Well, you know what sauerkraut will do?
Yes, I do. You know, Doctor, I never thought I'd see the day when I could... oh, boy. Talk to someone like you in the way we're doing. And, let's say, 10 years ago, someone told me this was possible. I would recommend that they be sent to the funny farm.
Well, perhaps you're right.
Yes, both William's fellow researchers and you listeners have difficulty believing these really are conversations with a scientist whose funeral took place 14 years ago. After all, it does take a bit of getting used to. The following exchange is one of several in which Dr. Mueller states that serial time, as we know it, does not exist in his world.
I said, I'm sorry, Doctor, but, oh boy, it's almost 4 o'clock in the morning, and... the last time we talked was, what, about 2:15. I just forget what time it is.
Oh, there we go. William, you know better than that.
What's that, sir?
You know better than that. I'm not aware of time over here.
Well, I know that's what you said, sir.
I'm not joking, William. I'm not joking. Now, listen, William, please listen very carefully.
Yes?
Just that frequency, William.
All right, sir. Oh, boy.
We were constantly amazed that Dr. Mueller could see everything in the lab. Often, we would lay out letters or magazine articles, which he would proceed to read and then discuss the contents. Here he asks about a new instrument that has just been placed in the lab.
Very well, William. What is that here? What is that in here right there?
Which one's that, sir?
That's that little one there.
Oh, the blue one? Yes. The blue one, sir?
Yes, William.
That's a biofeedback, sir. Biofeedback unit.
Are you really your problem, William?
No, sir, you know... you know what that's for, sir.
I'm just joshing, William. I'm just joshing. Let's get on with it.
During our years of working with persons in the world of spirit, we have learned that most great inventions are conceived in the mental and causal levels of consciousness and then implanted in the mind of a person called an inventor. We refer to this process as intuition. Our Spiricom device has exciting potentials in this area. Sometime in the decades ahead, ideas will be transmitted directly by Spiricom from a scientist in the higher planes, just as is being done in this excerpt of an August 1981 tape.
Now, very well, William. Here is your other frequency set now, William.
I think I've got a doctor.
Yeah, very well. Yeah, try adjusting it just a way, just a little bit, William. Do you understand me, William? William?
Yes, sir?
Try adjusting that frequency just a little bit. I'll get you out of 5, William. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5, 5, 3, 2, 1. Yeah, I think that's the best frequency, William. Now the next project, William. William?
Yes, sir. I'm listening.
Very well. The next project, William.
I'm sorry, sir. Please forgive me.
That's all right, William. That's all right.
All right, sir.
Now, in order to do that, we're going to have a more stable frequency vibe. Doctor.
Now for an evidential item that will gladden the hearts of even the most strict parapsychologists. On one occasion, Dr. Mueller suggested we refer to a small book he wrote in 1947 entitled Introduction to Electronics.
Yes, sir.
Did you obtain that quantifier yet?
Oh, that book of yours? No, sir. By the way, our friend, Mr. Meek, is really going all out to find that because I want to read those two pages you mentioned, sir.
Very well, and I want you to read them for you. There must be copies available somewhere.
Well, I think, George, it's Mr. Meek, our friend.
Your friend?
Yes. Even if he has to go to the Library of Congress, he'll probably do that.
Oh, I see. All right. Well, very well.
No. Even the Library of Congress does not have a copy. However, just at the time this tape is being prepared, I have located the book in the archives of the State Historical Society of Wisconsin, Dr. Mueller's native state. Dr. Mueller had given us the design of the electronic circuit to make a small device for treatment of arthritic joints. We built two prototypes, and on the small-scale tests by clinics in Florida and Japan, there seemed to be positive results. In this excerpt, reference is made to this device as IFRT. Also, you hear of Dr. Mueller's giving us unlisted telephone numbers and asking us to make calls. We did this on several occasions and with amazing results.
Yes, sir. Mention your name, sir?
Yes, William.
In what respect, sir?
Well, I was quite interested in wine riders, you know. Oh, yes, by the way, William, did you make that other gentleman on hearing absolutely yes yourself?
Capsule of cancer. Oh, I know what you're talking about now, sir. No, sir. Dr. Mueller, please, sir.
William.
Yes, sir.
Turn the camera off.
Turn the camera off. Well, sir, I like to record this so that if you should tell me something, sir, you know, and I forget. I'm trying to remember. I can always play this back, sir.
I said turn the camera off.
Dr. Mueller?
Sir, I have a novel and conversation is out of hand. Do you understand me, William?
All right, sir.
We have stated that the mind, memory banks, and personality survive death of the physical body. A facet of Dr. Mueller's personality, one which was of value in managing large and important research projects, clearly showed in the tone of his voice when requesting that the camera and sound be turned off so that he could make some highly personal statements to William. In excerpt number 6, Dr. Mueller mentioned Vidicom, the name we use for our video research equipment. Work on this device continues very slowly, but here is a late 1981 conversation on Vidicom.
I promised George that I'd show him
had accomplished with Vinicom. We don't have any facial features or anything like that yet, but both you and Mom, and I don't know who the other person is. I said just anybody else who comes with the love of God and you're friendly. But I don't know who it was, but I just invited anybody, and did you notice the interruptions?
Oh, yes, sir.
You did. Good. So, I don't know. There's just not enough hours in the day anymore, Doctor.
Well, you've got to get your rest, Jim.
I know I have to get my rest, but there's just not enough hours in the day anymore.
We conclude this series of excerpts with a most prophetic exchange.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Mueller's statement that he would not be here forever was most prophetic. As the months passed, I was able to observe that he was beginning to shed his dense earthly vibrations and was starting his progression upward, as depicted on a large chart entitled, In My Father's House There Are Many Mansions. Within 1 month of his having made the statement about not being able to stay forever, he had increased his consciousness to the point where our electronic system, called Mark IV, could no longer be used for contact. In anticipation of that event, we had already started to design equipment which might someday be able to resume contact with him. Such research is described in Volume 7 of this series, a technical manual entitled Spiricom. We stress that our Mark IV design of Spiricom is of very limited practical use in its present embryonic form. It requires an operator with a very special type of psychic energy. Even such a person cannot consistently communicate. For example, we lost our contact with Doc Nick shortly after it was established, and with Fred after a few weeks. Our Mark IV is not as good as Mr. Bell's first telephone. Although his messages could travel in only one direction, at least the device worked every day. However, the problems of devising a successful two-way system to speak to the so-called dead are far more complicated than those that faced the inventors of the telephone, telegraph, and radio. With our Spiricom research, we must grapple with spirit world energies of which our sciences are totally ignorant. For these reasons, MetaScience Foundation has already planned the design approaches for 3 additional types of communication systems. It has published a technical manual entitled Spiricom, summarizing its research to date and outlining these new approaches. It has made all of its experiences and designs available to researchers throughout the world, free of patents and copyrights. Now I want to demonstrate the high quality of voice reproduction, which is our ultimate goal for Spiricom. I can help you do this by turning the clock back and sharing some examples of a type of communication known as direct voice. This involves a very rare psychic ability in which certain energies from a living person are combined with energies from the world of spirit to form an invisible larynx or voice box. The person alive in the worlds of spirit steps up to this device and speaks just as he did when he still had his physical larynx. His voice is so clear that it can be understood easily by people in the room and can be recorded. Leslie Flint of London, England, is one of the comparatively few psychic persons who has this ability. Over the years, hundreds of famous people still alive in the worlds of spirit have spoken via direct voice through him. I have selected excerpts from four talks given by this method. They will show you how the individuality of the speaker still comes through and will add to your knowledge regarding what concerns individuals who have shed their physical bodies and now look at their life and yours from a different perspective. The first speaker is Sir William Crookes, the famous British physicist and psychical researcher. Crookes died in 1919 at the age of 87. The following five-minute excerpt is from a talk he gave via direct voice 43 years after his birth into a new dimension.
And I must admit, it's a great pleasure to me and others here to sometimes have the opportunity of endeavoring to break the bonds and the barriers and get through on some sort of level which is nearer our own condition of life and way of thought. And I'm very glad that you particularly are endeavoring to assist us in this.
Well, I think you're perfectly right in all that you say. I wonder if you were a spiritualist yourself when you were on the earth.
I most definitely was a spiritualist. And like a good many more spiritualists, I had my disappointments, and I must admit, looking back, that though it wasn't in a sense my desire to communicate with spirits on a material level, but I had to satisfy myself beyond any shadow of a doubt that it was possible, that it was true. And in consequence, I had to work on a certain level for that purpose and that purpose alone. Because if I were to proclaim, which I did eventually proclaim, my sincere belief, not only my sincere belief, but my sincere knowledge and assurance of the truth of communication, I had to bring it down to a material level so that it could be proved to my satisfaction on a scientific basis. But of course, now,
yes.
I am very conscious of the need for a true spiritual revelation to come, and I feel sure that we should be able to accomplish a lot more than we have done up to now, if only we could find the mediums who, once they've been tested and proved and have worked, no doubt, on a certain level for a certain time, for the evidence which is essential for that mediumship. At the same time, it is no point and no sense in staying on that level, pandering to the mundane. We must eventually be given the opportunity to get through, as much as it is conceivably possible, of revelation and a truest sense of spirit, and what spirit can achieve and what it can do, and what it is, and what it has done in the past, and where it is leading us. And all this we are hoping, desperately hoping, to accomplish. You know, I published certain books which were, I suppose, to a great extent, helpful in propagating this spiritualism, as you call it, to the masses. People took notice of me, and I'm very glad that they did. But I only wish to goodness that I could have pursued it further on a more spiritual level and publish my findings in that respect.
I have written many books about spiritualism by scientists.
Well, my name's Crookes.
William Crookes.
And you know, I've been very interested for a long time, and I have been present at your sessions, your meetings. Sometimes I've been very pleased, and like so many others, been very disappointed also. But that's bound to be in scientific research, in all kinds of research, and in such a subject as this, you're bound to have it. It can't be otherwise. Indeed, never two occasions are the same. The power, the conditions, the vibrations, everything is so variable and so changeable. But there's no doubt about it, there has been a breath of fresh air breathed into your world from this side latterly. And now we are hoping that we shall be able to continue that. We shall hope to be able to get through and to bring forth as much knowledge and as much experience as we possibly can. Of course, we've had a lot to contend with, as one can well imagine, all sorts of conditions and vibrations are bound to affect us from time to time. There are bound to be weeks when no doubt the little that we can give will seem little enough, but there'll be others when we shall achieve a great deal. There have been some very wonderful sessions in the past, and we hope to repeat them again and again. I certainly am most anxious for that, as indeed are all the group here. You know that?
Yes, oh yes, I know that. I'm hoping that things will be on the same line as all of you desire it to be.
Well, we hope so, because after all said and done, we've been going on for years and years and years, and the whole way, you know, I'm not saying it hasn't done a lot of good. I'm not saying it hasn't given a lot of people comfort. After all, that is a very important thing itself. But after all, we've got a great truth to reveal, and the knowledge that some of us have experienced and gained is such that we feel it's so vital that the people of Earth, at least those who will listen and those who will take note and learn, should understand more of it, this great truth. There's so much to be revealed, and people just do not realize how vital and important it is and what a vast change and difference it can make, not only in their personal lives, but in the world as a whole.
One of Crookes' great friends was Professor Charles Richer of Paris, France. Richer won the Nobel Prize for Physiology and Medicine in 1913. He spent 40 years in psychical research and was the only person to serve as president of both the British and French psychical research societies. He died in 1935 at the age of 85, but delivered these comments about the voice box 31 years after arrival in his new surroundings.
Oh, this voice box, it is just a term which I don't think has ever been properly explained. And quite frankly, I don't know that it is very possible for anyone to completely describe something which is by its very nature artificially created by the forces which are the natural medium and the seaters and the conditions generally at the time of the souls. But this is a substance which, of course, in the first place is used and drawn from the medium, which really acts as an intermediary. Actually, certain people who are concerned with this, who I suppose you would call scientists of a kind, although not in a material sense, they utilize this power, this force, this vitality, which is a substance which to us can be solidified in such a way that we can mold and create in it certain vocal organs or reproduction of vocal organs which are similar, I don't say exactly, which are similar to the organs of the person on your side. But then this is artificial clarity. We have to, by a concentration of our thought, have to enter into this and vibrate it so that it will create sound, wavelengths, vibration. All that you ever hear from us is purely artificial vibration. It comes to you as a voice. Sometimes it is lacking in personality. Sometimes a person who is receiving a message will say, oh, what the voice conveyed to me was very good, but it did not sound like this or that person. But this is because, naturally, the person who is communicating, unless they have a strong personality and can enter into this thing in such a way that they can assert their personality and transmit through this artificial means something of themselves. Some people are more successful than others. But this is something that takes training, that takes much experience. It doesn't necessarily happen all at once. Only with those who are really experienced can you hope to receive something which is so evidential and personal, because it is so like, so reproduced in such a way that it could be unmistakable only the person concerned. You see, this point is that this is a transmission of personality quite apart from message and context and content of message. It is something which is essentially of the individual, providing the individual can assert his or her personality, transmitting that thought force in such a way that the vocal organs or the artificial ones respond and create and vibrate in your atmosphere. Their sounds which are similar, but not necessarily accurately 100% of the individual who is communicating. Sometimes, of course, an individual who is more experienced will transmit in the first person for the person concerned, which sometimes can be confusing. The same as the materialization, often when the power is not too good or the conditions are not very congenial, instead of using the ectoplasm to build a film form and a figure, they were transmute, as it were, or transfigure the medium, or they feed them with the medium, and people who don't understand assume it is the medium. The medium is often blamed for inaccuracies. The medium is invariably blamed for whatever happens with that default. But actually, of course, it is not the medium's fault. The medium is merely a synthesized instrument by which we can use and create certain phenomena. And this varies so strangely, so acutely, that what may happen one day may not happen the other day. And what may be good one day will be poor another day. And also the atmospheric conditions, which are very important to know, affect very much the phenomena. If the conditions are bad, if the vibrations around the earth are bad, if thought forces around, for instance, especially in the circle of the time, are bad, they will affect it. Storm and an electric atmosphere are very bad for phenomena of this nature. And the miracle is that if one can achieve anything at all on such an occasion, because it is electrical vibration. And indeed, there are so many factors in communication involved that the miracle is that one receives, as you do often receive, extraordinary interesting things in communication.
Yes, as Professor Richet observed, it is remarkable that the voice and personality come through as well as they do. Now we hear the delightful voice of the beloved English actress Ellen Terry. Although she died at age 78 in 1926, here is an excerpt from a talk she gave through direct voice on July 4th, 1965, 39 years later.
I find personally that it is not so much for being able to concentrate one's thoughts so that they are received via this mechanism which is termed the voice box, which really reproduces one's thoughts. It's not so difficult getting one's thoughts reproduced. I think the main difficulty is making sure, if one can be sure, that one's personality is very apparent. You see, if you can realize that in this communication, it is really a form of thought transference. I concentrate my thought as to what I wish to convey. The reproducing voice box reproduces the sound so that you can hear the thought, the vibrating your atmosphere. But the difficulty is to intensify oneself to the extent of one's personality as one remembers it, particularly perhaps from an earthly point of view, so that it is recognizable on your side, perhaps to people who may have known us when on earth. The problem is to transmit a complete impression of oneself. Not perhaps altogether as one may be now in one's new environment, but perhaps more often as one was when one was on earth, particularly from the point of view of the evidential aspect. Of course, we're much more concerned with transmitting our thoughts and our personality as to our present state, which from our point of view obviously is the important thing. But we have to bear in mind that there are people in your world who are waiting for what they feel is substantial evidence of personality. And of course you must remember that quite often, and indeed in most instances, one must change. One does not remain the same. One does not remain as one was. If it were so, it seems rather pointless to go on living in any conditional world. But of course the evidential value of reproducing one's old self is important, and that is the problem and the difficulty. It is not so difficult, perhaps, in a sense, to reproduce oneself if you've only just recently come over, because you have not, in consequence, changed so drastically. And when you make the attempt to communicate, if you are successful, it is more likely that you will reproduce a great deal of yourself as you were known. But to those souls who have progressed and have gone on, as it were, to a higher condition of life, the old self is very different. For instance, a person such as myself who was aged, if I were to come back as I am now, in appearance and in personality, a much younger woman. Although I reproduce that self as I am, which would be preferable, because I would rather people know that I am no longer an old lady. But if I were to do that, people would say, oh, that couldn't possibly be, because she was very old when she died, and her voice was very different, you see, and so on. But people must remember that if we come, as we do, from spheres far removed from your world, then not only have we mentally and spiritually advanced, but also, in a sense, if I can use the expression physical, although it is not the correct word, because you will naturally think of the material aspect entirely, but the point is that we outwardly have changed. For instance, no longer has one an aged body, no longer does one suffer from the material ailments that one may have had when on earth. One's body is young and revitalized. It is quite different. My name is Terry.
Oh, are you Terry?
Yes, you remember I have spoken to you before, and I'm tremendously interested and have been for a very long time, as no doubt you know, in all aspects of communication. And particularly am I anxious to be of assistance and help to those in your world who are seeking truth. Well, I'm very happy indeed, because all we who come to you, and I speak for everyone here, our main concern, our main interest and desire in coming to you is to be of real service, to take away the fear of death, to give people the realization of life that is to come, to make them more and more conscious of the responsibilities one to the other while on earth, to realize that the life on earth is a very necessary and a very essential part of their evolution, and not to accept it just as the only life, and to try to realize too that it is not only the life that is to come. The responsibility of life is tremendous, and although there are times when it seems that the life on earth has no rhyme, no reason, no plan, there seems to be no real meaning or purpose behind everything in life, whether it is good or bad, whatever may happen to us or to those that we love or to the world, there is behind it all reason. There is purpose. When there are things that come to pass in our lives, in the lives of those that are near and dear to us, and indeed to the world at large, there is a reason. Quite often, indeed, one can trace much unhappiness in life to man himself. Man himself invariably brings upon himself all manner of ill, because he thinks ill, and he brings in consequence the unhappiness that he so often rejects, and so often he feels unnecessary, and so often he considers unjust. Often man rails against God, blaming God for all the manifold conditions of life that cause sadness and unhappiness. But within man is the power of good, and also, unfortunately, the power of so-called evil. There is always the opportunity for man to create happiness, to create good conditions, and there is for man the opportunity to create the opposite. Man blames God when things go wrong, and rarely praises him when things go well. Man creates, out of his ignorance quite often, catastrophe and sadness and illness. So much of the ills of the world can be traced to man's own foolishness. When man realizes this truth, when he realizes the great possibilities within himself to create a different world, where the thoughts that are predominant are good, and in consequence the acts that follow will be good. Then there shall come into the world a new realization and a new way of life.
For our final sample of direct voice, we hear the American newspaper tycoon William Randolph Hearst, who died at age 87 in 1951. From his new perspective in the world of spirit, he looks back at some aspects of his business life 17 years after his funeral.
I suppose in my own fashion I served a purpose. It doesn't alter the fact that, like most human beings, I made some drastic mistakes. But I suppose, like the average human being, there's the good and the bad, fairly equal proportions. Again, I suppose, like the vast majority of people, I do more or less the same. Doubt very much if I would do all that different. Although one can't help wishing that one had done so much more good. I wish to goodness that I could undo certain things. But I'm in good company. Between your world and ours is so in itself complicated. I realize that only too well. Trying to talk to you from this side of life and trying to keep my mind clear, fresh, and uncluttered. Trying to recapture when necessary memories which I suppose recounted in this fashion bring some proof to certain people. But remembering myself as I was and knowing my friends, those that are left, and they're very few. Remembering them, and knowing myself and them, I realize that it would take a lot of convincing. In the hard-boiled world of newspaper, which I already realize in trying to speak to you, is important and essential and as factual as possible. Qualities which certainly helped me when I came here to a better understanding. Never easy, and anyone in my position, in such a position as mine, finds it even more difficult. Possibly too much power is bad, 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 really bad, horrible. And in my own fashion I wielded a power over millions of people, and particularly over my intimate associates and close friends. And that power in itself, unfortunately, placed me in an invidious position. But although I had some faith, as one must have, and trust in human beings, particularly those tested and tried, I realize only too well that power corrupts even those that are near and dear to you. Surrounded by yes-men, surrounded by people whose one desire was to make for themselves the nest. Quite often, I was placed in a position where I was never sure about any man. And yet I was blessed with some very good friends.
Has been faked? Of course not. They were not created by fraud on the part of Leslie Flint. These four speakers are as vibrantly alive today as is our good friend and collaborator, Dr. George Jeffries Mueller, the American physicist who, over a three-year period, helped us create Mark IV Spiracom equipment. Now, with these added insights on the reality of life after death provided by the marvel of direct voice mediumship, let us return to the matter of our instrumental approach to communication via Spiracom. Let us consider the significance of the Spiracom breakthrough. The fact that our recent instrumental communications are in some ways as crude as were the initial communication by means of telegraphy, wireless telegraphy, telephone, and radio is of no importance. What is important are these astonishing facts. First, for the first time in mankind's history, it has been proven incontestably that death is merely a door to continuing life. Second, it is now certain that individual consciousness, what we often refer to as personality, continues to exist and function in a disease-free and pain-free environment. Third, the needless and destructive fear of death can be removed, as well as the deep concern over the passing of a loved one. Fourth, the taboo our culture has imposed on the whole subject of death can also be removed. Fifth, something else that can be jettisoned is the accumulated, non-productive religious dogma that has ruined countless lives over the centuries to the extent that it imposed burdens of fear and guilt. Sixth, the knowledge that the mind and soul transcend death of the physical body will help man begin to understand that it is his own thoughts and emotions that largely determine whether he will experience sickness or enjoy vibrant physical and mental health. Seven, Spiritcom developments can bring about changes in both science and religion to the improvement of both. Eight, each individual can begin to realize that he or she is a permanent inhabitant of an apparently limitless cosmos and not just a soulless maze-running rat or corn-pecking pigeon as proclaimed by present-day behavioristic psychologists. Ninth, in the decades or centuries ahead, when such an instrumental system is perfected to the point where it can communicate with the mental and causal planes, mortal man will have access to the accumulated wisdom of the ages. That's quite an imposing list, isn't it, to result from this development of Spiritcom? How many events in the history of man have had more profound implications for the future of the human race? Now you see why I said in my opening statements that I was going to share with you information regarding one of the most exciting events that has occurred in the long history of man. So there you have the first report to the public on our many years of research. In a few days, listen again to the conversations with Dr. Mueller and the direct voice comments by Richet, Crooks, Terry, and Hurst. Realize these for what they truly are: conversations taking place with people whose bodies were buried or cremated 14 to 43 years ago. Realize that their minds, memory banks, and personalities are still vibrantly alive. Now that you possess this knowledge, as well as other information in the accompanying booklet and in the Many Mansions chart, you can rest assured that you too will be living forever.